Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It's Thursday, for goodness sakes. That means tomorrow's Friday, and we'll be in for a lovely summer weekend. It's very nice to have you with us. A reminder, you can join in on the conversation. There's a lot to talk about, and you simply do that by writing to us, panel@wamc.org. We would love for you to take part in the conversation. Joining us for the discussion this morning, we welcome communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing fantastic. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine. Thank you. Good. Very well. All is good. Very nice to welcome our dear friend, the journalism professor and the chair of the communications department at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. Kaylin Brown joins us. Good morning.
Morning, Joe.
How are you?
I'm happy to be alive. How are you?
I'm equal. Just about that. Just happy to be alive. And Alan, also happy to be alive. Alan Shartok is with us. Another day, sir.
Word.
All right. There you go. Well, good morning. Very nice to talk. Let's talk. We'll start with the story. I'll just admit up front here that I'm having some computer issues. And so the normal rapidity that I have access to the information before me, I do not have today. So I will probably be relying on the panel a little bit for certain facts and figures that I do not have at my fingertips. But I do seem to remember the lineup somewhat of the stories that we want to talk about today. And one is a sad story, of course. We had speculated about it a little bit earlier in the week, but we learned that Senator John McCain, the senator from the state of Arizona, and a hero by all measures,
Except those of Donald Trump.
Well, it's his measures. And he is he has an aggressive brain tumor. And
which also killed Teddy Kennedy, as well as Bo Biden.
And it is it's a very sad diagnosis, and one there was certainly speculation after the initial announcement of the removal of the tumor above his eye that this was more serious than it was originally known or reported, and now we do know. The family released a statement last night, so that not only is very sad in the sense of this great American hero, but also about what kind of tizzy this puts in the United States Senate in.
You know, it's very interesting to watch everybody's response. People who are checking in from all over the world and saying, you know, he's a fighter. If anybody can beat it, he will, and the rest of it. But it was the one that I was most interested in was Barack Obama. Is talking about a true American hero. Now, Barack Obama has stayed above the political fray, basically, during all of this time. So when he says a true American hero and a military hero and the rest of it, I think he was sticking it to Trump in a somewhat obscure way, because Trump had, reminding people, without saying it, that Trump is the guy who said that his heroes had, he didn't have heroes who were caught. He only wanted heroes who weren't caught. It was despicable. And I don't think there's anybody in the United States who doesn't know that or remember that. Now, Trump comes out this morning with some very solicitous and very nice statements about McCain. But when does anything mean anything? I mean, John McCain has got to. Well, yes. So John McCain has got to go, you know, home at night and think, oh my goodness, you know, this guy said the worst thing about me that has ever been said about me, and not forget it. Do we forget these things? Is it okay on one day to say we wish him and his family all the good because he's a great man, and on the other day have put, you know, just really put a knife in his back?
I'll go back to what you just said about the President Obama politicizing McCain's cancer. I did not think the former president, was doing that. I thought he was simply saying he felt badly for Senator McCain, and he wished him well. I didn't believe that that's what the, that he was politicizing it. I hope he wasn't politicizing it. I have a sense Obama would not do that.
Mm-hmm. This is because Obama said that cancer doesn't know what he's up against.
Yes.
Right. He said all these nice things. Really wonderful things.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's really sort of one of the major differences between Dr. Brown and myself in that she sees the lighter side of life. And I think I take a look at the more realistic way that the whole thing works.
Well, I think there's a genuine outpouring of love and admiration
for him.
I think that on both sides of the aisle, whether one agrees with John McCain philosophically, first of all, you have to admire his extraordinary courage and for what he did when he was a POW. And that, and I'll just repeat it, what most people know,
you,
that
you bet.
He could have left. When he was captured, he was given the option to leave. And he didn't leave because he said he was not going to leave his men behind, his fellow soldiers behind. And he ended up staying basically in a cage for a little over 5 years, isolated and tortured.
So you're not disagreeing with me necessarily.
No, I think that first of all, people admire him for his courage at that point. And then they also admire him for what he has done over the years. And I think even in this last year, we have seen where he has put country over party. And again, I disagree with him philosophically on many, many issues. But you don't doubt for a minute that he does what he does with a sense of, you know, a deep understanding of the issues, a deep commitment to particularly our soldiers in this country, our military, and a deep love for the country. I didn't see that former President Obama's speech, his statement was political at all. I thought it was one of the many heartfelt statements. Now, I do think that when you see what, you know, the statement that Trump put out, you do read it with a bit of cynicism given what he said about John McCain, which I think is one of the most deplorable things that he said during the campaign. And I still don't understand how somebody can be commander-in-chief when they denigrate, you know, John McCain, one of our great heroes, and in the process, all POWs. But that aside, I think that there's been an incredible outpouring because around the United States and around the world, because there's a genuine affection for him.
Yes, he's lived an honorable life. He's a noble person. And I agree with you, Teresa, completely. He has put the country first. He is not a person who has sought the light. I don't believe that's who John McCain is.
Well, not so fast. I mean, you know, he was running for senator from Arizona. And here's a guy who really knows Trump and knows his problems, and yet he was there for him during this campaign. He didn't say, forget that, you know, this is a bad guy. You know, he didn't. I think we have to remember that.
Well, I think he stood up. Well, the one thing that he did do that, you know, I think one will always question is selecting Sarah Palin. I think that was reckless.
It was that.
Vice president was reckless. But I think on balance, and, you know, you've seen it this year, on balance, he has been willing. Again, I disagree with him on a lot of policy issues, but is he somebody who's informed? Yes, he is. Is he somebody who has a deep commitment to the country? Yes, he does. And does he have a terrible road ahead? Yes, he does. You know, this is just a devastating illness, and it, in a way, it's so sad because you know, of what he already has gone through in his life, to have this be what he has, the road ahead now, is really tragic.
There is also a sense that, I mean, there's a few left, but those great old-time three-decade senators are...
Right. Real.
And by the way, I
political figures.
Political figures, yeah.
Right.
That is a dying breed.
Almost larger-than-life political figures, yeah. Now, again, Alan, I take your point in that if you go issue by issue, there's a lot to criticize about, you know, because it's a different philosophical. You wonder why he did this political move or that political move. But I think on balance, And I also think, I know you're a big fan of term limits. I think that John McCain is another example of why I'm opposed to term limits. Because
because there's one who you want to save, but that's always the problem, as opposed to so many of the people who serve in our legislature and our Congress who are, frankly, there way too long.
Well, I think experience matters over time. I think experience has its
benefits. And you've worked there in the Congress, and you got the disease while you were there. You know, you sort of bought the baloney.
I understood the experience matters.
Yeah. Well, we heard from James Brown. I want you to know who
James
said.
James Brown.
Trump is trying to get the Congress to say he won the popular vote to award him the Purple Heart for his immaculate bone spur. Trump makes me hurl. Jim, the veteran.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I wonder what veterans. You know, there's an interesting local connection with John McCain. There's a Colonel Bob Craner. So when he was imprisoned, there was the person in the, for lack of a better word, he was essentially kept in cages or these boxes. And it was a person from Cohoes, New York, Bob Craner. And they figured out a way to communicate. They never saw each other in the 5 years that they were captured, but they came to find great love for one another because they found through tapping a way to communicate with each other.
Isn't
back and forth.
Yeah.
And so when Bob Craner, I mean, when the Republican convention, when McCain accepted the nomination, he spoke about Bob Craner and how what a difference he made in his life. But when you read the story of the two of them, it reminds you what they went through. And how horrible. But for all that time, they never saw each other.
And how could Trump do what he did in order to advance his own candidacy?
Read the story of Colonel Bob Craner and John McCain, and then ask yourself how Donald Trump could say what he did and then still get elected. Denigrating handicapped people are the two things that I just, separate from all the policies. He's the commander in chief, and he denigrated POWs.
Well, yeah, and he sexually assaulted women, so that's where I have a big problem.
Good point.
Yeah, not a good Quinella.
Going with the horse thing.
Yeah,
nice
I figure
job.
It's the week. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Okay, David says, Alan, I don't necessarily. That's an interesting word. I don't necessarily think Barack Obama was specifically sticking it to Trump. I think any time Barack Obama exemplifies the dignity of the office of president, he could be perceived as sticking it to Trump.
I think that's well put.
Pardon the misspelling. Dictated on my phone, close friend. Peter says, I don't think choosing Sarah Palin as his running mate was an example of putting country over party.
Right. No. I think that certainly there are mistakes along the way. I would put that one in the category of one of his reckless mistakes.
Well, yes. And, of course, the guy who sits at the top is responsible. But I don't know that he was the one who made that choice. In other words, somebody on his staff, I think.
Yeah. I mean, by all the books about it, that it was strongly, he was strongly urged to do it. He wasn't a big fan of it, but he went along with it. But ultimately, it was his decision.
And Martin says, all policy differences aside, we should be so lucky to have a man of McCain's character as president right now. Catherine says, this is a devastating diagnosis. Did Trump ever apologize for his awful remark about McCain being a BOW? I don't remember him ever.
I don't believe that the president has ever apologized for anything.
Yeah, and I actually looked that up last night and couldn't find it. And what you found is a lot of people saying, has he never apologized? And when he apologizes, he needs to apologize not to just John McCain, but to all POWs. I mean, that was...
And to all of us.
That was a devastating insult to all POWs. You know, I don't like people who've been captured. It was just so beyond the pale.
And you know, he was doing that to all of his opponents in the primaries. You know, Crazy Ted and Little Marco and this and that. But they all seem to have said, okay, well, that's politics, so we're going to support the terrible things he's doing right now.
But this is beyond politics.
Oh, yeah.
And he behaved that way yesterday.
Well, but
all day.
But if you talk about somebody's parents, I don't remember which one, he talked about the father of one of the candidates, you know. It's awful.
Right. Well, no, that Ted Cruz.
I mean, Ted Cruz's father
was
part of the assassination
of Ted Kennedy. which
was of John Kennedy.
Yes, of John Kennedy, and was a that was a National Enquirer story that he picked that up from.
There's just it's not acceptable behavior.
We heard from Doug, who said McCain was also against ending "Don't Ask, Don't Tell." I wish him well. I also support term limits, says Doug. All right. And
I agree. You know, there's a whole, as I said, there's a whole series of policies that I disagree with him on philosophically. But on balance, as a person who, even though I disagree with him philosophically, I don't think there's any doubt that he's deeply educated in the issues and cares deeply about his country.
Right. And we can disagree with him and recognize that he is a principled man.
Right.
Absolutely. He has principles, which we can't say about everyone in government at this moment.
And Fred took his shot. He said, Junior in the Russian affair, good morning. One thing I have yet to hear from our oh-so-magnificent soothsayer, that's you, by the way, Alan, couldn't it be that Hillary aspect of the story was simply a fallback, a way out, and Donald Jr. foolishly went with it? Thanks, Fred. Anything's possible. Does it sound right?
We'll talk about that in just a few moments. And we welcome your letters as well. Panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. I'm going to give this story a minute because I think that's all it's worth. But we will also find out today if O.J. Simpson gets parole.
We will.
Yes.
I didn't know about
that. At noon today. Anybody want to take a guess on that one?
I mean, if he was anybody else, he would clearly, if he was anybody else, he would clearly get the parole.
He would have had the parole a while ago.
Right. But the real question here is, are they punishing him for something that they think he did that he was acquitted for?
That is a real question. I agree with you completely on that. And they're trying to backtrack and rewind. Okay. Can we have a redo? Is it a mulligan?
Yes. Is this, should we have this man in jail perhaps up to 33 years, and do we have him pull out the full sentence because he has almost more or less confessed to now the murders of those
individuals? Right, and there was a mistake. There had been a mistake in the past, so let's fix it now. Could that be why the decision will happen the way it may happen?
So we'll see. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Teresa Bourgeois make up our panel, and we welcome you to join us. It is panel@wamc.org. We only ask you a few things. Just keep your messages short.
Civil.
Avoid links. Some civility wouldn't be bad. And we also just hope that you don't use, and just proofread them first, because sometimes we don't know what the hell you're saying. And we want to. That's all.
Sure.
Panel@wamc.org, and we will be right back after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome. It's a Thursday morning, and it's 9:35 in the morning, and we welcome you to our roundtable panel. And if you've already been with us, well, thank you for staying tuned. We appreciate that. We welcome your letters. Panel@wamc.org. We're going to read some letters, and then we're going to move on to some of the other big topics. We have the CBO on repeal. We have the Trump interview that he gave with the New York Times, in which he said he has second thoughts and doubts about hiring Jeff Sessions, which is interesting. We have the subpoenas. We have Kushner going up on the Hill next week. So all kinds of good stuff to talk about, which we will. But first, we'll get to some letters.
All right. When Trump made his derogatory remarks about McCain, he demonstrated his character or lack thereof. And this coming from a narcissistic, draft-dodging egomaniac, not a person we would want as our leader. How did he get elected despite his derogatory comments? The dumbing of America, and that's from Matt.
I'd like to hear from any military folks about why they thought that was okay and still voted for him, if anyone's listening.
Mm. Good point.
I'd be curious about why they tolerated those remarks, why they think it's okay and still voted for him.
Well, why did women tolerate the remarks and vote for him in record number?
Yeah. I don't understand it.
I don't get that either.
That makes no sense that women voted for him.
Yeah.
Well, it made sense to somebody, and they did, you know.
Well, I know, but we're trying to figure out the
logic. I mean, I'm just saying, if anybody's listening who's a military or veteran and...
Don't convince me with the facts.
Why did they... why was that okay with them?
You look confused.
She's listening for letters.
your mouth keeps contorting as if you were going to say something.
I think about what he has said and done concerning women, and I can't make sense of what would make a woman cast a vote for that candidate. It's nonsensical to me.
You and me both, but I want to point out to you that we don't have an ERA in this country, and a lot of women voted against it. Right?
Yes.
And we also don't have pay equity, and a lot of women make, wage decisions, too.
So. That's exactly right. And so the people on this panel, we recognize pay equity. Nobody gets anything. So, okay, so Richard says, panel, it's shocking that candidate Trump could say such vile candidates about the military sacrifice of John McCain. What's more troubling is that so many millions of Americans would vote for Donald Trump and still support him, knowing he made such remarks. Your point exactly. Jason says, I do admire McCain. However, don't forget his very, very cynical turn on immigration when he ran for re-election in Arizona. Not honorable there at all.
Right. Again, I disagree with him philosophically on a number of policy issues. But on balance, do I think he cares deeply about the country? He really understands the issues and he works hard and he's courageous. Yes. Again, I disagree with him philosophically, but that's a beauty in America that you can agree to disagree but still think somebody's honorable. And I think he's honorable and cares deeply about his country.
So do you think, Teresa, just coming back at you on this one, that it's could be conceived of some that illegal immigration is a bad thing as opposed to just being political to win votes in Arizona? See, in other words, I know that...
Well, I think that writer is saying he played politics with the immigration issue
right.
for the purpose of getting elected.
That's what he's saying.
And he did.
And
do
know
I
that
do I disagree with... Well, because he changed his position before the election. Do I agree with that? No. Do I agree... You know, we could go through a whole litany of policy issues and things that he did that on any individual that I disagree with. I mean, on the welfare vote years ago, a lot of people who I admired quite a bit, I thought, went the wrong way on what I would consider the wrong way on the welfare vote because they wanted to get elected and they thought that unless they voted to dismantle the system, that they wouldn't get reelected. But on balance, did I still think that they cared deeply about their country and they were honorable people working hard on behalf of their constituents? Yes, I did.
The lady Russian lawyer said she will testify before the Congress if her safety is guaranteed. Is she afraid of Putin or Trump? So this letter, interesting.
That's an excellent observation.
Well, people do get people who oppose Putin in Russia do get offed. We know that. So maybe she's exporting her sense of what happens in Russia to what might happen here if she spoke.
Well, I don't know. We'll talk about the story a little bit more when we get to it.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Okay. Okay. So that was from Catherine, and now we're going to hear from Kathleen. I'll never forget one voter I interviewed on Election Day. He was a veteran who said he chose Trump because he wanted someone who supported the military. I asked him what he thought about Trump's comment about McCain. The voter said he'd never heard about it. Possible. Michael says, too bad there wasn't an immigration ban when this predator's grandparents immigrated here. There would be a few dozen women alive who would not have had to deal with having been sexually assaulted. Anybody? No. Anne says, it seems really ironic to me that this great man, John McCain, had a serious medical condition when health care is the front and center conversation in our country. Please elaborate on the health care that these politicians that work for us have, what it covers and how it's paid for, and those of us who are simply the Americans paying for their health care can't have the very same coverage. This is a point we've made many times on this program. And I get more mail on this than perhaps anything else. we get more mail on this than perhaps anything else. They have what could only be called a gold card healthcare system in Congress. And I know some of the legislators, the congressional people that I've interviewed, have made it clear that they don't take it. They go elsewhere because they think it's the one thing that they know people are really concerned about. Rank hypocrisy. Kathy says, Senator McCain is a flawed man. His behavior towards his first wife was awful. His selection of Ms. Palin put party over country. He didn't have the courage to back out. He hasn't had the courage to really take a stand against this president. But all that said, his flaws are irrelevant to our sadness and sympathy with the diagnosis. He has served our country in uniform, been through hell. Our sadness at his diagnosis goes behind his political successes or flaws. This is about being human. Nice letter.
Very nice.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Nancy says, Dear panel, I'm so grateful for your opinions, and given the horrendous state of our government, I look to you for the voice of sanity. Grateful, grateful, grateful. And that's from Nancy. And we're grateful to you, Nancy, for listening. And Joshua says, ex-Haitian official who was in the U.S. to testify against the Clintons is now found dead. This is like the 10th person clearly related to opposing the DNC and Clintons found dead in the past year. I've never seen a single story of any of them from mainstream media sources. I'm not an Alex Jones guy nor a conspiracy theorist, but this is getting out of hand. All of this only legitimizes people like Jones. For those who don't blindly believe in botched robberies or rampant suicide of political opposition. Well, people do die, you know. It takes time, but they die. You know, it happens.
I don't know the story. I know the conspiracy theory that's out there, but I don't know this particular story.
Diane says, outpouring of support for Senator McCain is heartening. He is fortunate to have access to the best health care our country can offer. Can't help but wonder about the single mom with two jobs suffering a similar diagnosis. Will we see the same concern? That's DZ from Greenfield Center. I am a veteran, says Matt, and was appalled by Trump's comments about McCain. Why any veteran would support Trump is incomprehensible, says Matt.
Thank you for your service.
What did you say?
I'm saying thank you for your service. He said he's a veteran, and indeed. I said thank you for your service.
Nick says, conservative judge to Supreme Court, just that simple. He's a Navy veteran, and he says conservative judge to Supreme Court, just that simple.
Anybody? Right. That they supported him because they wanted the Supreme Court.
Get a conservative
court.
Judge on the court.
Right.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other issues to discuss. We'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let's go back to some other stories making news, and we'll talk about the Donald Trump interview with the New York Times. Citing recusal, Donald Trump said that he wouldn't have hired Jeff Sessions. He said on Wednesday that he never would have appointed Attorney General Jeff Sessions had he known that Mr. Sessions would recuse himself from overseeing the Russia investigation that has dogged his presidency, calling the decision very unfair to the president. In a remarkable public break with one of his earliest political supporters, Mr. Trump complained that Mr. Sessions' decision ultimately led to the appointment of a special counsel that should not have happened. Sessions should have never recused himself, and if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job, and I would have picked somebody else. In a wide-ranging interview with the New York Times, the president also accused, they say wide-ranging, but read it, read the transcript.
Free-for-all?
Try to. I mean, that's a ramble.
Free-floating.
Including his remarks on Napoleon.
In a wide-ranging interview with the New York Times, the president also accused James Comey, the FBI director, he fired in May, of trying to leverage a dossier of compromising material to keep his job. Mr. Trump criticized both the acting FBI director, who has been filling in since Mr. Comey's dismissal, and the deputy attorney general who recommended it. And he took on Robert Mueller, saying that the special counsel now leading the investigation into Russian meddling in last year's election. Mr. Trump said that Mr. Mueller was running an office rife with conflicts of interest and warned investigators against delving into matters too far afield from Russia. Mr. Trump never said he would order the Justice Department to fire Mr. Mueller, nor would he outline circumstances under which he might do so, but he left open the possibility, as he expressed, deep grievance over an investigation that has taken a political toll in the 6 months since he took office.
Well, I don't. I really am anxious to hear what my colleagues, you know, have to say about this performance. However, I think it's just extraordinary that he gets out there and he just lays the groundwork for firing Mueller, because that's what this is all about. I think as the hounds get closer, he's going to find he has to fire Mueller. I think he's going to fire Mueller. Because when confronted with the alternative to not firing Mueller, coming out and really being in a bad spot, and he'll know because of the questions that they're being asked, he's going to do it. I've said this for weeks to you all, and I've been met with nothing but derision. I'm just kidding about that.
The president clearly does not want anyone who is going to look at the underside of his administration. And he does not want someone who is not favorable to his argument. And he continues to beat that drum. And it's obvious to a lot of people reading this that he is on a defensive crouch, and that defensive crouch is a sign of perhaps guilt.
And what is extraordinary about this is his lack of loyalty to anybody. I mean, here's Jeff Sessions, practically got him nominated. The only senator who comes out for him, he's just being terrible.
There are a lot of reasons to have doubt and regret for hiring Jeff Sessions. I don't think recusal of. of the investigation right. into Russia would be the one that you would pick if you are looking at a list.
Now, I've got to go to Teresa on this because, you have such good factual recall. And so my question on this is, Trump criticizes Sessions for not having said no because if he knew he was going to recuse himself. But had that happened already, that he would recuse himself? I think what happened is he got caught lying before those committees, Sessions did, and said, I wash his hands.
During his confirmation.
Right. Yeah. During his confirmation. Right, right. So I have views on the larger issue, but just let's focus on that one statement about him saying, if I had known, he nominated him. It's not that he was a stranger. They should have been talking all along. The staffing, they should have. How could he have not known this in the process of what they could and couldn't be talking about and what he would? I mean, that's not on Jeff Sessions. That's on him. When he said, if I had known, he's admitting that he wasn't properly up to speed on his own nominee. It's just ridiculous.
On the integrity of his own nominee.
And on how the process would work. I have a broader journalism question, if I might. It's that how do journalists cover this? Because it just seems to me that yet again there's an effort to normalize. This interview, everybody should go and read it. I've read it a couple times. I still don't get it. It's so... wow, to
bizarre.
Me. It's so bizarre to me. But how do you, at one point, don't you just scream, this is just not right?
Yes.
Well, I think that the Times clearly has done a fine job of sharing what happened in this interview, completely sharing it in an effort to say, this is what we are seeing. You make the decision. And that's the job of journalism. We are going to report what we've learned. The president has asked us to come and talk, and here we're going to listen. We take it down. This is what we experienced. This is what he had to say. And you, the public, make the decision on what we have learned. They present it in a particular way. Facts are presented based on the author's choice, yes, but as long as facts are presented, and then it's up to the constituency and the voters, ultimately, and citizenry, to say, is this normal or not, right?
You think it's 33% is reading the New York Times?
No.
I don't. No, I don't, but how
they're,
do we
they're
fix
over, they're,
how do
fix
we, that?
They're over. They're over. Well, it's a long-term project about education.
It is. I agree with you completely.
Well, no, I think people are, you know, again, I don't, I think denigrating, I just think that if you, different people are covering it this different ways, and if you just listen to MSNBC, you'll get a particular perspective, and if you just listen to Fox, you'll get a particular perspective. They'll be diametrically opposed, and you need to read it all. And then on occasion, if you, you know, if you only or listen to it all, or try to go back and forth a little bit, I know you disagree with that, but I, you know,
I'd be happy if just House and Senate members read it,
right,
and understood it.
Right.
I mean, if just the those who are
reporters,
are going along for the ride and sort of realize what is happening and what is being said.
TV news anchors.
I mean, there's so much that is contrary to what we know and what has been reported. And this is a small thing, but the meeting that had not originally been reported with Putin that was said to be an hour that would have racked up 3 hours of time between the two world leaders. He brings it down to 15 minutes in this Times article and says that they talked about adoption and nothing but after a couple of pleasantries. And basically, he was talking to his wife, who apparently wasn't even there, according to those in the room.
And when you're saying you talk about quote-unquote adoption, what you're really talking about is a Magnitsky Act, which is sanctions. Every time you hear Donald Trump or people around him say, all they talked about is adoption, what they're really talking about is this issue, this Magnitsky Act and sanctions against the U.S., sanctions against the Russians. And then in retribution for those sanctions, Putin blocked Russian children being adopted in the U.S. And so when they say we talked about quote-unquote adoption, what they're really talking about,
talked about sanctions.
Is sanctions, the U.S. sanctions.
I actually talked about Russian adoptions with him, he said, which is interesting because it was a part of the conversation that Don had in that meeting.
Right.
She's and still but, covering for the kid.
But right. this whole issue about recusal and the things that denigrating his attorney general, denigrating his acting FBI chief. It's
and the entire intelligence community.
And the intelligence community in this interview is absolutely stunning and not surprising, but stunning. And you just don't do that. It's just such so many conflicts. But this, Alan, to your point when you asked again, I mean, why his staff must have told him that there's certain things that Sessions is going to be able to be involved in and is not going to be able to be involved in given his role in the election.
Well, I have no truck for Sessions, that's for sure.
Right.
However, I do think that he took one look at the situation. They were calling him a liar. He had to get out from under this or he was going to get caught. And he did what was the responsible and right thing. That's something that that the president would never understand because his concept of loyalty is everybody
only
has to fall on their sword,
right.
You know, for me. And I'm sorry.
Can I ask, because I know you're focused on the Mueller. The other line that was struck me is that he says that Mueller is, quote, running an office rife with conflicts of interest and warned investigators against delving into matters too far afield from Russia.
Yeah.
So is that a veiled threat or a veiled threat against
sure it is.
The—
I read it that way, but I also think that it's ironic, right? It's ironic that the president is criticizing Sessions and his office for conflict of interest when what he's seeking is favorability from the very people who are making decisions about his potential future
right.
with the whole Russia investigation, right? Isn't that a conflict of interest if the president is saying, I want Sessions to be conducting this investigation because he's in my pocket? Well, to me, that's how that reads.
Right.
So...
Okay, so you want a couple of letters in the last couple of seconds? Or
sure.
Not? Okay. Valerie says, hi, everyone. I love, in capital letters, the show. I don't think millionaires, billionaires should be allowed to serve the country, Congress, etc. I don't think they are all in touch with the real lives of the people of this country. Thank you and keep up the good work. And that's from Valerie. Hello, panel. Why is Trump giving an interview with the Times? What shoe is about to drop?
Well,
Teresa
brought that up early on in our conversation.
Right. I think his pattern is this wild tweeting and then an interview with the New York Times and then something big happens. There's been a pattern of this now over the last 6 months. So that's what I was just saying to Joe at one of the breaks. So I'm just waiting to see what new happens.
Panel, I respect John McCain for all the reasons your esteemed panelists discussed, but we should all remember his participation in the Lincoln savings and loan debacle in the 1990s. McCain, along with four other senators, tried to help Charles Keating, a crooked banker, after Keating donated to his reelection campaign. Keating was convicted of corruption during the savings and loan crisis of that period. McCain was censured by Senate Ethics Committee. This, in fact, was very dishonorable. Steve from Poughkeepsie.
Right, the so-called Keating Five, yeah. Right?
Nicholas says, so are you saying that Trump did not vet Sessions enough? No. I think he got a good attorney general in that the guy had some integrity.
Right, but then to go back now and say if he had known that he had to recuse himself, I mean, it's just, of course, if either knew or he should have known. If he didn't know, he should have known. Either one is negligence on the part of Donald Trump.
Kathy says, the Haitian man who died was set to testify against the Clinton Foundation. He was in his early 50s and died from a gunshot to the head. Of course, a lot of people die from gunshots to the head in this country. Yes? No?
I don't know details on this.
Okay, all right.
I don't like to talk about stuff I've not known.
Barbara, because Hillary was worse, they just had to create the propaganda to support it. Bannon, Fox, Sinclair Networks, etc. I've noticed that people on the right and the left still have a hard time admitting that Hillary wasn't as bad as they were led to believe. Disinformation slash propaganda is powerful. By the way, good morning, panel. And that's from Barbara.
Good morning. All right, we're going to hold there. We'll go to news with Ray Graff, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is a Thursday morning. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Teresa Bourgeois making up the panel this morning. Let us talk for a moment about health care. The president threatened the electoral consequences for senators who oppose the health bill. He had which seemed to be a very non-awkward lunch with 49 Republican senators, prompting some of them to reopen the possibility of trying to vote on the sweeping legislation that they abandoned earlier this week. There was no new evidence that the bill could pass. At the lunch, the president also threatened electoral consequences for senators who oppose him, suggesting that Senator Dean Heller could lose his reelection bid next year if he does not back the effort. The president also invited conservative opposition against anyone who stands in his way. Any senator who votes against starting a debate is really telling America that you're fine with Obamacare. Now, we also got the fresh analysis released by the Congressional Budget Office, a repeal-only approach, which also lacks the votes to pass, we should note, would increase the number of people without health coverage by 17 million next year and by 32 million at the end of a decade, according to the analysis released yesterday. 32 million people.
How in the world can this guy look in a mirror and say it's going to be a bigger and better and more affordable health care plan and then kick 32 million people so that anybody who had anything has nothing now? It's extraordinary, isn't it? Am I missing something here?
I think it is extraordinary that they would try to sacrifice people's health and their health care options. I also think that him threatening fellow government officials, elected officials in this instance, is a low blow at the least.
It's a tough one. You know, it's a tough one. I got to tell you, you think about this for a moment. Heller was sitting right next to him, Senator Heller, right?
Yes, from Nevada.
Mm-hmm. And he started talking about Heller as if it was sort of the guy was right there. Now, let me ask you guys a question. Let's assume you're going to vote Democratic in the next election. If you were living in Arizona and Heller was up for office, you don't get to vote. If you're a Democrat, you don't get to vote, obviously, in the primary. So Heller has to survive, and if Trump comes out against him in a primary, he loses because people like that's where the 36% is in the Republican Party, right?
So would a Republican still vote for Heller or not? That's the question.
No, they're gonna primary him. I mean, the other thing that came out yesterday is that the Club for Growth and the Tea Party Patriots— with these conservative groups, and you've got to wonder if Bannon has a hand in this. I don't know, but you've got to wonder. They launched this thing called Obamacare Repeal Traitors, and they're going after him and Lisa Murkowski and Rob Portman and Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia. They're targeting all of these folks
okay.
with ads and such. And so, you know, they're going to primary these folks.
Okay, now, but I just had one more piece to add on to that. Let's assume Heller survives and you're that same Democrat. You didn't get the vote in the primary, obviously. Now you get a chance to vote for Heller or the Democratic opponent. Who are you going to vote for? In other words, people think Heller, you know, has done the right thing. I certainly do. In what he said. But will he lose the election to virtually any Democrat who gets put up, because the Democrats are going to come over and vote for the opponent, for the official Democrat? So Heller's in some real trouble here, don't you think?
He is in some real trouble.
Trump said yesterday, "I'm ready to act. I have my pen in hand. I'm sitting in that office. I have pen in hand. You've never had that before. For 7 years, you've had the easy route. We repeal, we replace, but he, Obama, never signs it. I'm signing it." So it's a little different.
Sure. They passed it knowing they couldn't. They passed it knowing it wasn't going to be implemented.
Knowing it was a terrible bill. But that they were protected by the fact that President Obama was going to veto it. And now the same bill that they have voted for repeatedly and sent to the White House, how many votes did they take on it? 60-plus votes? They don't want to pass it and send it to the White House this time because President Obama is not there to veto it. And they know it's not good for the American people. And they know that because the American people have stood up and got engaged and said, this is bad for us. And I just don't understand how, and this fix that they're talking about this morning, where that they say that will help with moderates, for those 31 states who did the Medicaid expansion, they'll just put more money in those states. Well, okay, so maybe this year they put more money, but what about next year or the year after?
But isn't that the real problem? JP was talking about this. JP Miller was talking about this on Tuesday, that when you move it to the moderates and you help the moderates, then you lose the conservatives. When
That's
you lose
exactly
the conservatives,
right.
you lose the moderates. And we're going to play that ping pong game for a long time, aren't we? We already have been.
And also, as you point out, Joe, so well, there are a lot of games that go on in politics. So, for example, the state senate passes a bill knowing full well that the assembly is
never
going to pass
it,
and vice versa. And now we see a great example of the sanctions bill in the Senate, which passes 97-3 or 98-2, and knowing that speaker Ryan is not going to take it up in the, because he's an oligarch, a political oligarch in the House of Representatives, so they're off scot free.
Well, I think there should be, and there may be more and more pressure on the House to move on the sanctions bill. But on the problem with the health care bill is that we. The policy is deep in the weeds because healthcare is really, really complex. But that they're doing serious. Donald Trump is doing serious damage right now to our healthcare infrastructure because of the incredible uncertainty that he's creating in the markets.
Yeah.
So even if they do nothing, which I think that they may do something, you know, eventually. But even if they do nothing, he is systematically, destabilizing our health insurance markets. And that has real-life consequences for people who are sick, for our school systems, which then has consequences for our taxpayers, for our nursing homes, for our rural hospitals. It's just, you know, there's a very high price that the people are going to pay for the politics he's playing now.
So he wants them to stay in Washington until they do something.
And then somebody said, well, are you going to stay in Washington, Donald Trump, until something happens?
Well, he's just waiting with pen in hand.
Right.
So.
So what would they do?
But he can have his pen anywhere. Yeah, I don't know. What do they do?
Well, he was saying just repeal, but if they just repeal, 17 million lose their insurance immediately,
right,
and 32 million. But not just that; it really unravels the private markets even though it doesn't directly affect them, there will be an indirect effect on the private markets, according to the experts.
But the larger issue is that they don't have the votes to do that, and there is nothing coming down the pike that seems to be a solution to any of those problems. So you're at a stalemate. So what do you do just hanging around Washington when nobody can agree on anything?
Right.
Well, it's his way of sort of posturing to make sure that the American people think they're bad and he's good.
Right. Well, yesterday's meeting, again, just as the New York Times article, made me think, what's coming up next? There's something that we're going to see something in the next week or so that makes us look back and say, okay, now I understand this healthcare meeting. Because remember, he has not been engaged in the healthcare issue for much of the time it's on the Senate side. And that's because McConnell asked them not to, because they didn't think it was helping. And then when it's dead, all of a sudden he invites everybody down to the White House.
And then and he starts threatening individuals.
And he starts threatening individuals
and,
after the fact.
Making them extremely concerned about their livelihoods and their constituencies.
Sure.
To what end?
Right. Sure.
And
to what end?
Maybe it's
exactly.
Just to shift the blame onto the Senate for the damage that the administration is doing to the healthcare system. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe they want to do some blame shifting. But certainly he and Secretary Price at Health and Human Services are, you know, the one thing that Donald Trump did do is day one of his administration, he signed that executive order that gave Price free rein to look at regulations and change them.
Sure. Exactly.
What does it do to Mitch McConnell and the rest of the agenda on the GOP?
Well, I keep thinking of the analogy as the very tough school teacher who comes in and says to the class and starts to bawl them all out, and they're all looking down at their at their desks and say, not me, it's not me. This man is very powerful, and he's very powerful. And I think McConnell has folded all the time, Joe. My sense of it is McConnell hasn't given him a moment of grief, really.
Unless McConnell sees as his job is to protect his members from a bad vote on health care and to take the hit for it, which, in fact, he so far has protected them from a bad vote on health care. Because remember, you have Congressman Faso and Congresswoman Stefanik and a whole lot of other people on the House side.
Well, you say that, but he was ready to do a vote just this week on repeal, whether he had the votes or not.
He was threatening to do it, whether he would do it or not. A lot of it's posturing. I don't know. I don't know what happens to him. But here's what I do know. It's July, what is it, 20th, 21st? I don't even know that.
It's
July
20th. Oh, no.
Isn't that shocking? And a debt limit bill has to pass by August, early August. And, you know, how are they going to do that? They need to pass, and they need to move a budget. And they want to pass a tax bill. And I think the reason, you know, this health care bill stays alive is because they need the resources from passing this health care bill.
Well, you've said that a lot, and you're probably right. But tough noogies. I mean, that's just not the way it's going to work.
Well, McConnell said, I think we all agree it's better to both repeal and replace, but we could have a vote on either. So to me, there's a bit of surrender there in that observation, that he would take one or the other, but we got to move it forward and we got to make a decision.
Right.
So but if he has a vote on just repeal, he loses that vote and he knows it.
Okay,
yes.
So if you're
yes.
the Democrats, do you sit down with him? You sit down with the Senate Republicans and say, okay, let's make a deal here. We can do a number of things to improve Obamacare.
When they put repeal and replace to the side and they focus on strengthening the ACA, which is Obamacare, then yes, you do. And that's what the Democrats did the other day. They had a press conference. They laid out saying, here, yes, let's start talking about how we strengthen the ACA. Before you do that, the Republicans have to lay aside this idea of repeal and replace, of changing the structure.
And what's maddening is when they do it and they come up with something, Trump's going to get the credit for it.
Right. It'll be a Trump win.
That is what our president always wants, is credit for everything.
Yeah, sure.
That is a big part of his whole presidency.
Sure.
But I think it's more important that we think about who is going to benefit from a health care bill, and are people going to be able to get and keep their health care? So however they get to that, to me, I'm not as concerned about the credit being who gets credit, especially the president.
Well, let me argue that with you, if it's okay.
Of course.
Professor. The other side of that may be that if he gets credit, he gets more popularity. And if he gets more popularity in 2018, the Senate and the Congress and the House don't go Democratic. So when you say, and you're quite right, what's really important here is whether people are going to suffer, whether they're going to do that. But if he gets the credit for it, doesn't that help install a Republican Congress so they can do more damage?
Yes, you are exactly right, Professor. I think that that could happen. However, if the media continues to do its job and cover these stories and help our audiences understand how this is playing out and where the different people fell on this and the different factions fell, if there are voters who care who gets credit, that will be clear to them how this all came to be. And it wasn't because of to credit to the President of the United States.
Well, I wish you were right, but I don't know that people are engaged enough to have that kind of keen analytic ability.
Hopefully they are more engaged than they've ever been. I believe that there are a lot more people engaged than
there
have
are,
been
which
engaged.
Is why somebody like John Faso has to watch out, and Elise Stefanik have to watch out, because you now have a base that just wasn't there the last time, which well may be there this time.
Yes, my own emails blows up with a lot of activism. People have my email, and I have a lot of people trying to have me move on certain directions.
And why not? Meanwhile, President Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, will speak to the Senate Intelligence Committee in a closed-door session Monday as part of the panel's widening probe into alleged ties between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. And, oh, by the way, Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort apparently will be receiving receiving subpoenas as well, and will testify in open session. At least Manafort will testify in open session on the 26th, and they're hoping that Donald Trump Jr. will testify there as well.
The new Manafort information is just so damning in terms of his debts and how much he owes to the Russians. No wonder they dumped him, in the beginning, because they saw this train coming down the track.
They said that they will comply voluntarily with invitations to testify. This is Dianne Feinstein, yeah. Adding that they have agreed to issue subpoenas if necessary for the two gentlemen. We shall see. Let's finish up with a letter or two.
All right. Historically difficult to take away benefits once they have kicked in, and that's from Janice. That's one thing we have certainly learned here. Ed says he doesn't even know what health insurance is, how it works, how much we pay. He confuses it with whole life. All he wants is Obama destruction, and that's from Ed in Woodstock. And Wanda, our Wanda, says, hello, folks. I have two military relatives by marriage who voted for Trump because, one, Trump convinced them that if they had done what Hillary had done with emails, they would have been court-martialed. And, two, they are immersed in Hillary hated because she sold 20% of the U.S. uranium supply to the Russians. And, three, they think Trump is anti-abortion. All of these things are not questionable, says Wanda. Peter says, I'm a Vietnam vet. I have probably never agreed with John McCain, but he is an honorable man, and Trump's remarks were deplorable. I wouldn't have voted for Trump based on that. I would never have voted for Trump based on that one remark, and that's from Peter. Kevin says, I remember candidate McCain defending Barack Obama's integrity and character against. This is a wonderful moment, by the way, folks. It was. Because remember, the lady stood up and said terrible things about Obama and that he was born in another place.
And he said,
and
no,
McCain,
no.
In the middle of a campaign, stood up and said no. And that's something that Trump would not have done. I remember candidate Senator McCain defending Barack Obama's integrity and character against critics. And at a Republican rally on the campaign trail years ago, McCain's character and class are surely missed on the Republican campaign trail these days. Kevin and Tivoli and Nancy says, for his base, one word explains it, abortion. Why did the evangelical community vote for an immoral, twice-divorced philanderer? They think he was put there by God. Abortion is the litmus test. And Denise says, good morning, panel. Black women are voted for Hillary. Racism enabled white women to ignore voting against their own interests and ignore the blatant misogyny. Denise. Sadie says, Professor David Hackett Fisher made the case for persistent regional folkways or inherited patterns of understanding the role of government leadership loyalty extending back to the English settlers 400 years ago. The borderers fit the case for Trump voters. They admire winning regardless of what is won, charismatic leadership and loyalty to clan family above all. It makes more sense than any other explanation. Jeff says, I'm not a woman or a veteran, but I know a Trump voter is both. Politically incorrect statements may offend you, but they have nothing to do with the policy. And despite her being an emotional woman, she uses her logic to vote. Sorry if that doesn't suit your stereotype of what a woman ought to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was that? Okay, I missed
Did I miss something?
Shall I? Do we want to hear it again? I'm not a woman or veteran, but I know a Trump voter who is both. Politically incorrect statements may offend you, but they have nothing to do with policy. And despite her being an emotional woman, she uses her logic to vote. Sorry if that doesn't suit your stereotype of what a woman ought to be.
Oh, I see.
So do you think I was stereotyping women earlier? I didn't think I did, but maybe
no,
I did.
No, I don't think so.
That's interesting.
Kasson says, why would any Republican vote for Trump, for that matter, given Trump's past comments about Republicans? And that's from...
And that is it.
Okay.
We are out of time.
Good.
All right. Good. We're done. Good. Love to you all. Teresa, Kaylin, Alan, we'll be back after this.